is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
Ukraine, $61 billion odd, voted by Congress, headed to Ukraine. For months, the question has been, will there be more? Will Ukraine be defeated by running out of ammunition? Apparently, right now, very good ammunition is flowing. Perhaps some ammunition has flowed heretofore, described as secretly long-range missiles. But in any event, the cavalry is coming, as is said in many movies. The cavalry is coming. But what does that mean for peace in Ukraine? I welcome Anatole Levin of the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft, writing most recently with his good colleague George Beebe about the prospects of peace on the eve of, during the weekend of, Congress sending more war. Anatole, a very good evening to you. Your first reaction when you heard that Congress is going forward with this package, were you encouraged because this will answer those who said Ukraine was abandoned, or are you discouraged because this means another year of war? Good evening to you.
Hello, John. Well, both, frankly. I mean, I was encouraged because this will help Ukraine to hold on for this year. I mean, it doesn't ensure it. Nothing is certain. But I think, as so many people said, without this aid package, Ukraine was probably facing outright defeat this year and the loss of much more territory. So this aid will allow, or help, not allow, Ukraine to hold its existing lines. It won't help Ukraine to counterattack because it doesn't have the men to do that. What I was disappointed by was the failure of the Biden administration to combine this with any kind of negotiating strategy or strategy to begin seeking peace in Ukraine, because this aid package will only last a year, basically. Allow Ukraine to hold on for a year. But after that, everything, once again, is completely in the air. It depends very heavily, of course, on the U.S. elections, on the next U.S. Congress. And long-term U.S. aid at this level simply cannot be guaranteed. So what we need is a combination of continued aid to show Russia that it can't simply win. But with an attempt at a negotiating strategy to try to bring this war to an end. And instead, what we have is Western officials, not just Americans, repeating over and over again that peace is entirely a matter for the Ukrainians and nobody can dictate to the Ukrainians. Well, there are two problems with that. The first is that the so-called Ukrainian peace plan, which they are presenting at this peace conference forum in Switzerland, is not a peace plan. It calls for the complete withdrawal of Russian forces from all the occupied territories of Ukraine, including Crimea, war crimes trials, reparations. Ukraine can, and of course, Russian acceptance of NATO membership. Now, the only way you could achieve that is by a total Ukrainian military victory. Now, that is simply not going to happen. Both, as I say, because the requisite levels of Western aid will not be there. And even when they were there last year, Ukraine failed to break through the Russian lines. But also, once again, you know, by now, barely a fifth of Russia's population, and really serious difficulties, as we've read again and again, in getting Ukrainian young men to serve. Ukraine just does not have the men for that kind of victory. And my fear is, and that of my colleagues, that the longer we keep this war going, the greater becomes the possibility not of of Ukrainian victory, but on the contrary, of Ukrainian collapse.
This is a war of attrition, and I note that the RADA was busy these last days, according to reports, voting on mobilization and demobilization. The demobilization was a fascination to me because I learned that there was no limit once you signed on, and that some or many have been in the fight since the beginning with no way to back away, to say, my time is done, I want to go on with my life. At the same time, I'm told that that very much discourages people to sign up because it's forever or until you're wounded out of action. There was also talk at the same time that the RADA would vote on this. They chose not to, so it was put off for another day. But repeatedly now, there are stories, and they might be cherry-picking, about draft dodging, about going after draft dodgers, about people evading service and that sort of thing. Is this rising to the level of a political turmoil, or are we talking around the edges here while we waited the aid package?
No, I mean, it's certainly a very big political issue, as demonstrated by the fact that the, you know, despite the acute need for more men, the Ukrainian parliament has now spent six months, you know, debating this issue of increased conscription without yet coming to a conclusion. There is tremendous public resistance and evasion of service. Already, when I was in Ukraine last year, before the Ukrainian offensive, there were beginning to be signs of that. You know, internet sites where young men could tip each other off about where the, you know, basically the press gangs were operating, so they could evade them, and giving each other advice on how to get out of the country. But then there was great hope that last year's Ukrainian offensive would succeed. But obviously, after the complete failure of that offensive, the will to serve in what may look like, you know, an increasingly futile attempt at victory is obviously going to go down. Now, that said, I mean, there is still tremendous, you know, will to resist in Ukraine. But I think also you have to distinguish between, you know, a will to defend Ukraine against further Russian attacks and a will to participate in new Ukrainian offensives, which, as I say, are beginning to look increasingly hopeless.
You and Mr. Beebe also turn to Russia and look at it from its side. And the question is this a good time for Russia to negotiate? Or is time on its side? It can wait as long as necessary for the American election, for the EU election, for the UK election, while it's building up its armaments, not just for Ukraine, but overall. Does time remain on the Russian side to wait the year of this new flux of ammo and then try again in 25?
I think so, yes. But at the same time, I mean, everything is not going Russia's way. And, you know, while Russia can grind down the Ukrainian army, while it can probably take, you know, more small towns and stretches of countryside, to gain a really clear victory, you know, a historic victory in Ukraine, Russia would need to take the great cities of the east. And, you know, as we have seen in this war and also in other wars, you know, I was in Grozny in the 1990s and what we've seen in the Middle East, urban warfare is a very, very difficult and bloody business for the attacking side. The only major city Russia has succeeded in capturing and holding so far is Mariupol. And the other cities of eastern Ukraine, like Kharkov in Ukrainian hands, are much bigger than Mariupol. The other thing is that even if Russia managed to capture those cities, it would capture enormous piles of ruins, as in Mariupol, which Russia would then have to rebuild amidst, of course, an infuriated population. So there are, you know, also strong arguments for Russia to make peace, if, of course, it can make peace that answers what it regards as its most, you know, basic needs and demands.
That takes me to geography. Novorossiya, traditionally, ceremonially, historically, includes Odessa Oblast, which reaches all the way to the Danube. Is that part of the package that Russia must have in order to close the conflict?
No, I don't think so. Simply because, I mean, look, from a Russian point of view, of course, what they would like to have is, I don't know, something like a return to the Russian Empire. But there's a huge difference between, you know, what they can get and what they would like to get. And to capture Odessa and Mykolaiv would mean the Russians getting across the Dnieper River again. Very, very difficult to do. Or an amphibious landing, but the Ukrainians have managed to destroy a large part of the Russian Black Sea fleet. That would be a suicidal mission, I think, for the Russians. So I think, you know, in the end, obviously, the eventual settlement will be, you know, decided by the situation on the battlefield.
And that means attrition, correct? I mean, there's no bright side to this. I'm trying to find something positive, but attrition is what they're doing now, and that will continue. Is your measure?
It could well do. We don't know how Russia would react to that, but certainly if the Ukrainians started hitting Moscow on a considerable scale, and once again, I mean, well, they have a perfect right to do that, given that Moscow has bombarded Kiev repeatedly. But I think that could lead to some considerable escalation on the Russian side, though we don't know what that would be. For example, some attempt at the sabotage of NATO supply lines.
Also, history says when you don't put out a small fire, a small war, it has a way of jumping into a large war. Is that a risk as well? As you say, Ukraine could collapse, but could this grow into a regional war, a conflict with NATO, if not solved over the next year?
Well, yes, I think so, because Western officials are now talking about putting, you know, pressure on Russia on every front wherever possible. One hears about, you know, attempts to support a new revolution in Belarus against the government of President Lukashenko. Now, the Russians have made absolutely clear that if there is an attempt at a repeat of the Maidan in Kiev in 2014, they will occupy Belarus militarily to ensure that it remains in Russia's camp. Then, of course, you have a civil conflict on NATO's borders, and there is the risk that in retaliation, the Lithuanians will cut off Russian access to the Russian exclave of Kaliningrad. Now, that is by far the most likely scenario for a war with NATO, because the Russians would then, since this would be in breach of an international agreement with Russia, the Russians would regard themselves as having the legitimate right to invade Lithuania in return. Then NATO and Russia are at war. So we need absolutely, we need to end this conflict to reduce the risk that it will spread disastrously.
Anatole Levin, Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft. There's a new appointment for the United States, an ambassador from the United Kingdom, when we come back. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.